You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Lacrosse Boots. The Lacrosse Alpha Burley Pro delivers an athletic and glove-like fit that will hold the foot in place to prevent chafing and rubbing while on the move. This boot comes in a variety of camo options and insulation options as well. Visit lacrossefootwear.com and check out the Alpha Burley Pro today.
All right, welcome to Land of Legacy Podcast. This is your host, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
And we're right here for another hunting podcast on Sportsman's Nation. Kind of doing something a little different. And it's amazing. To me, I'm like, I asked you pre-show, I'm like, has he never been on? I can't believe we've done almost over 100 podcasts.
Over 100 different ones. We did 81st Habitat Hunting Habitat Podcast, excuse me, this week, and then we've done, I don't know, 25, 26
somewhere
hunting
there.
Podcasts. But, and I know it's funny because, like, he's been in the films. We talk about him all the time, talk about things that he's seen and share and just the insights, conversations that we've had. But your brother, Chad, has never been on the podcast.
Never been on the podcast. So that's today's guest.
Yeah.
My brother, Mr.
We're going to the bullpen.
Chad Keith. Chad, I know you're driving. Where are you at? What you wearing?
No, please, no, don't answer.
I'm on I-49 heading south, heading into Arkansas. Or I'm in Arkansas anyway.
Gotcha. Headed home. Now, my brother, for a little bit of background, a lot of the stuff that Matt and I talk about on the podcast, there's a third party that's often discussing it with us, and that's you.
Certainly.
Much everything we do and a lot of the work you're involved in, but we're the ones in Missouri on the podcast and you're the one in Arkansas. Yeah.
A lot of the stuff I'm doing the work and then you guys talk about it.
Yeah,
set the record straight. That's
right. Yeah.
All the pictures that get posted are all of Chad's.
Yeah.
Before and after.
As you guys know, Landon Legacy is just Chad and Matt and I are just the grunts.
The voices, that's it.
Yeah. We're the faces. Yeah.
Oh gosh. We don't have a bright future.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a little bit of background. Chad, you're 4 years older than me. Of course we've been hunting and managing the farm together forever. But since this is the hunting podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about your recent trip to Colorado, to do a DIY elk hunt.
Yeah.
So, well, give me a little bit of the background.
Well, we went out around Steamboat Springs, Colorado. It's not over the counter. We drew for the tags.
What's that draw situation like for you, Chad?
It's about every 3 years is what we get drawn. We went 3 years ago. You've got a chance at 2 years, but it's generally 3 years.
And that's for a bull, or is that if you get a cow tag?
Ours is an either sex tag.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, you're hoping for a bull. I killed one the last time. And I killed a bull this time. I passed a cow about 3 days in and hoping I didn't regret it.
You're batting 100. Pretty much a professional guide in the Steamboat Springs.
Considering it's the second time I've been on an elk trip, and I think I've got the luck behind me right now.
I'll tell you why, and I'm going to tell everybody why right here. Chad is a federale, works for the U.S. Forest Service. And he gets a good chunk of vacation time to take off to go to Colorado. Isn't that right?
Well, I do get quite a bit of vacation time, but...
But you bank those hours and you save them appropriately.
Yeah,
manage your time well.
I don't take off all through the summer. I save it up for the fall and the spring.
Yeah, I think this is one thing unique about you when comparing you to the other coworkers. Is a lot of times I think when you're doing fire and you get like hazard pay or time and a half pay when it's overtime, some people just take the additional cash, but you take it as vacation time. Isn't that right?
I mean, I did that when I first started out to build up the overtime for hunting trips.
Gotcha.
But now I'm to the point where I mean, with a Forest Service, you can carry over 240 hours of leave every year. So,
so many people hate you right now. Yeah, yeah. We hate you.
Us being the
when
prime.
You get to that point, it's all riding that line and trying to keep it close to that. Mm-hmm. Especially you plan ahead for a big 2-week trip. You plan ahead and try to bank up your hours to where you've got leave for big trips.
Yeah, gotcha. So. I think
you work the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You work
well.
Well,
they've got to give you that much leave to have to put up with working for the government.
That's right.
I've always made this joke to people when they ask me what my brother does. And of course I tell him he works for the US Forest Service, but I say this, like, is he hunt a lot? And I'm like, you know, there was times where when I worked for the Drurys and I worked at Growing Deer where that's what we were trying to make videos. So we were hunting all the time. Now we don't hunt. We hunt quite a bit still with Land and Legacy, but it's not like our business is devoted to we have to kill deer. And through all that, you still hunted about the same amount that we did.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Well, and you know, when I first started, though, too, we hunted a whole lot more than what we do now because we've gotten wiser with how we hunt.
It goes back to that man.
Back in the early days, we hunted every day just because.
Yeah,
season was open. And now it's, I mean, we'd have hunted Saturday morning and evening, no doubt, because it was on a Saturday. And now it's to the point where it's like, we know the temperature's terrible. I mean, Saturday evening I did watch a field, but I was way back away from everything because it was so humid that I was sweating like crazy. But
we
I was kind of scouting ahead.
Yeah, didn't even hunt opening day. Didn't hunt tonight.
No, it was 100, it felt like 113 when I looked at the weather app.
Well, and see, like I'm going down here to work and looking at the weather.
Did we lose him?
Work.
Oh, you cut out for a second.
Oh, okay. Saying I won't be up for 2 weeks to hunt, so
okay.
I'll be working because it's going to be so hot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. Well, anyway, so I guess back to the hunt. It's a DIY Colorado managed hunt. So you draw every 3 years. You have to get preference points. How much a preference point cost?
I can't remember. They've changed the system in the past year originally you'd have to just go ahead and put in like you were going to get drawn. Now you just buy the permit. They don't even charge you. Or you buy the point. They don't even charge you for the whole tag. They've changed it around. I can't remember exactly. I mean, it's one of those you're going to buy the point no matter what. So you don't worry about the cost as much as just going ahead and putting in.
Yeah. Okay.
But
so what's the overall tag cost whenever you draw? What's the tag?
Oh, it's like $660.
Okay.
Something around there. I can't remember exactly the number, but it's right around that, I think Colorado, we were talking about it on the trip. I think Colorado's cheaper than Wyoming and Montana both, but Montana, it's a combination tag.
Gotcha.
Where you get both. Because, you know, we've all been talking about trying to do a trip too, and it's, you've got to weigh all those things.
Yes.
But it's, we're going public land. I mean, no guides or anything. Actually, where we're going, you can ride, there's four-wheeler trails and stuff, so you can ride four-wheelers in, which makes it somewhat handy. You can get back away from the vehicles a little farther, and then it's still we were walking about 7 miles a day, even with riding four-wheelers.
And that's all flat ground, though, right?
Yeah, flat ground.
What's the elevation out there?
We were between 9 and 10.
So pretty
between
pretty
9 and 10,000 feet.
Huh. I've been.
We were pretty high.
I've been around Steamboat, and I've been around Trinidad, and they were both at 6 to 7.
Yeah.
What did you have to do? Like, and there's different techniques and stuff like that, Chad, for you to be or a person to get used to that change in elevation. What are some of those things that you do to get your body ready?
It started out. I ran all summer.
Right.
I was trying to run at least 2 or 3 times a week. And then the last time we went, of course, that was the first time ever going out there. So I had researched the best things to do. And one of them was to drink water almost nonstop, to never let a water bottle, never be without a water bottle in your hand.
That's and prior to the trip, or like once you get out there in that?
Once you get out there. Gotcha. I mean, even on the, I started about like when we got into Colorado, just on the drive, I started, because you don't want to have to stop yeah. and pee all the time.
Right.
But you start then, and that's, they say that that's how your body acclimates itself to the altitude, is one of the ways. And then I'd also read a baby Tylenol every morning helps with the altitude stuff. So that's what I would take, a baby Tylenol every morning and be drinking water. Of course, after about 4 or 5 days of it and you're tired and you kind of slack off on the water drinking, but by then you're kind of used to it. But well, the first 2 days I'm guzzling it.
Down in Luke water actually, and sucking wind.
Yeah.
Luke actually made the comment and asked me how old I was, because I was having to, I'd be like, dude, I got to stop a second.
Yeah.
I got to stop a second. And it's like, how old are you? And he's like, dude, I'm guzzling water.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. I get that comment all the time. When I was in Nebraska, they say it. You know how it is for me, Chad. I don't ever stop drinking or eating, snacking. And so, it's like, how old are you? Well, I'm not that old, but how many more waters have I drank than you? A lot.
Yeah.
So, yep. So you were hunting, and I see in the pictures a lot of aspens, probably a lot.
Yeah, it's a pretty good mix. There's a lot of the, we call it dark timber, but it's like the spruce. And of course, I mean, out west, the pines have had a huge bug kill. Mm. So you'll find pockets of pines and some younger pines, but it's a good mix of, we call them parks, and it's like the open aspen timber and then like sections of dark timber all around. So it's a good mix to where like the elk will go in bed in that dark timber through the day. Especially it was getting up into the around 80 about every day we were out there. So the last time we went, we could hunt all through the day, and they'd bugle way up into the morning. This time it was so hot, they'd be done by 9:30.
Oh, wow.
So we would go back to camp about every day, because it was just like, we're just getting hot out here walking around. We're not doing any good. So we would go back and then go back out there mid-afternoon and start listening again and glassing.
So, you've been successful now twice, and you've been out there about the same time, same general area. What are the elk doing? Like, how much bugling is typically going on, and how are you using that to be successful? Like, well, what's the typical game plan each day like?
You know, I've only been twice. Luke Anderson, Adam and I, mutual buddy, he's been four times, and every time it's a little different. The time before, they were really bugling, but they still weren't really coming into the call. This time they bugled, but it seemed like we were earlier. We were still seeing groups of bulls, like there were some bigger herd bulls that had 10 to 12 cows with them, but you had random groups of like three or four bulls by themselves, like just feeding.
Right.
So you couldn't really, they really weren't responding to calls. And see, like Luke, one of the first years he went out there, he said it was one of those you could cow call and have bulls come running from the next hillside. They would come running from hundreds of yards away and come running up there towards you.
Wow.
And we go the same general time every year. It's just, it just happens.
What's that time?
We go, there's guys in the group that are muzzleloader hunting. They put in for muzzleloader cow tags. So we go out there a few days before muzzleloader season and then hunt through that week of muzzleloader season. So you kind of deal with a few more people with muzzleloader season going on, but in general, we're going farther than most of the people are muzzleloader cow hunting, so they don't go too far from the four-wheelers, so we can kind of get somewhat away from them.
Sure.
So that's always typically first and second week of September, sometime in that range when you're there?
Yeah, sometime around. I think we left Labor Day this year is when we headed out.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Sometime around the first couple of weeks of September.
Gotcha. Now, I think it's interesting because if you want to share it, now, I've always heard, it's always funny. You hear things about what the elk are going to be like, but then as Matt loves to do the hashtag woodsmanship. It's like people tell you things, then you get out there and you listen, and you're like, that's not really how it is. Like, you always hear elk or ghosts on the mountain. Like, you don't ever hear them move.
Super stealthy.
But then you tell me they're as loud as can be, like sound like cows.
They're like a herd of cows walking around, what we've experienced. Now, the group this time, when I called them in, of course, there were like 9 or 10 elk walking in. And it was a little windy on the ridgetop, so I didn't hear them as well. But, I mean, you'll hear them from the next hillside a lot of times. You hear rocks rolling, and it's like, there's an elk over there. I mean, the last time we went, I was even, and even this time, we'll get elk to bugle back at us by cow calling and then rolling rocks around. And they associate that with elk walking. Mm-hmm. So they're not the most quiet creatures, but you look at how big they are, and they're walking around on that terrain where it's really rocky and really steep. I mean, they're gonna knock some stuff around.
It's no difference from us, you know, in the springtime using a turkey feather or turkey wing to scratch in the leaves or do a fly down. It's using and replicating that same natural sound that they're used to hearing. And it honestly probably builds confidence in your setup. They're like, oh, that really is an elk. It's not just one stationary.
It's one of those, I mean, obviously I'm about the farthest thing from an expert on calling elk, but in my mind, it's just one of those, the same thing, just to add a little confidence, mm-hmm. and make it more realistic. I mean, I was stomping sticks and stuff just to make it sound like an elk walking around, because anytime you're close to the elk, I mean, you hear them. They're not the most nimble of creatures. When they walk over, there's dead trees everywhere, and they walk over them, they'll kick their legs on them. You hear a lot of noise when they walk around. So we just tried to mimic that.
This bull that you killed this year, you called in, correct?
Yes.
Now, 3 years ago, did you call that bull in?
No.
Okay.
No, three years ago, the day I killed that one, I found a really good crossing. And it just happened to be a day when it was like 40-mile-an-hour sustained wind. Mm. So there was no chance of hearing a bull. But, I mean, when you drive out there that far, you're going to hunt every day you can. And we found those crossings, and we split up and set on both, and that bull happened to walk through, and I shot it. It was following a couple cows. These, I was cow calling and got in between a couple bulls. There were two in the group that I called in, and then there was another one off the hill. And these they responded a lot more, so I moved in closer to these two bulls, and actually called. Once I got close enough, I could hear the cows calling back to me, and they actually came in first. And then the bull I killed was midway in the group, and then the other one was in the back.
But so you had a lot of eyeballs on you.
Yeah, I had a lot of eyeballs, and actually had to break break one limb over to get a gap to shoot through, because they kind of. It was one of those, I was moving, and I was pretty aggressive. It was kind of late in the week, so it was time to get something done, and I kept moving closer and closer, and I got on one side of a rock pile, and they stepped over another rock pile, and it was like, oh, man, they were right there, and I had to reach up slow and break a limb over just to have a gap to shoot through. Mm. So
sometimes you just got to be aggressive and get in there tight. We experienced that here with turkeys. You know, especially when you're trying to call them in and they're vocal, but they're not completely closing the distance, and you just got to get in that
and
wheelhouse.
See, we'd kind of dealt with that because we were on some bigger bulls earlier, and we're trying to play it safe with them. The wind was really swirling. It's just like hunting around home where it's all the hills and stuff. The wind swirls really bad, and we were dealing with the thermals and trying to get it right, and we got in really close on a couple big bulls with a bunch of cows a couple times, and Luke was actually halfway drawn on one and had a cow see him and run off. And then the next morning was muzzleloader season, and they were either close or we had a couple shoot either a cow out of this group or close to them, but watched the group run up over the hill of the bigger bulls, and we never heard them bugle again. They'd been bugling. They were about the most consistent of any of them.
Oh, wow.
And we never heard them again. So it's kind of one of those, you try to play it safe, but then you never know. Once the muzzleloader season opens and you put more people out there, it can shut them down pretty quick. And you kind of have to, it's, you've got to ride a fine line of being too aggressive or being too passive. And definitely, you hate to spook anything, because we could have spooked those just as easily, but then somebody else spooked them. So,
yeah. What is the calling like? What are you doing to try and call these? Are you doing a lot more bugling or cow calling?
Well, last time it was a lot of bugling was all we could get them to respond to. This time, like, I called these in with pretty much just cow calls. That's all I did, was I had a mouth call in my mouth and would just cow call and just change the tones, change the length of it, just trying to mimic multiple cows coming towards them, and then stopped. But throughout the trip, I mean, you know, you hear people talk about public land, you want to tone down your calling, all that stuff. There were times that you couldn't get bulls to bugle without bugling to them. Mm-hmm. We had a couple close calls where we got some bulls pretty fired up by bugling, and I was rolling rocks and stomping sticks and had a stick breaking or thrashing another tree next to us just to make noise, and they bugled pretty well, but they had a bunch of cows with them, and they weren't coming any closer. But that's
read, a majority of body, it. The temperature.
Like, yeah, you're just kind of, I don't know, you just kind of playing it by ear on what they're doing.
So as this bull is coming in, you said he's middle of the pack. Kind of bring us down the whole shot opportunity. How far was he? How were you able to get drawn with that many eyes in such a close confined space?
Well, you know, I've always heard that elk, as long as you're not moving, if you have something behind you, they don't pick you off. And I've seemed to have better luck with them than, like, I don't think you could get away with what I've gotten away with a Ozark whitetail.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause these, I had a majority of the herd right there at like 45 yards when I eased my hand up and moved the aspen limb down to get a hole to shoot through. And then I had a crosswind on the hill, and all but the bull I killed started to walk. I was against a rock pile, and they started to walk on the back side of the rock pile downwind of me. But the one bull came in, like, on the other side of the rock pile at 25 yards.
Oh, boy.
And started to walk out in the hole, and then I don't know if the other elk smelled me a little, but I heard him move around quite a bit more. And this bull stopped and started to go back to see what they were doing. But he was at 25 yards, so he got behind a couple aspen, and I drew. He stepped to a hole between a couple of them, and I shot and hit him. I think I lodged it in the offside shoulder, and he ran maybe 10 yards and fell over. I mean, it was one that, geez, I shot, and I could see the arrow sticking out, and I'm trying to grab another arrow just in case.
Right.
And I look up, and he'd already stopped and was standing there looking, and I could see the blood and was like, I think he's hit pretty good. And about that time, he just tips over and falls over.
Oh, wow.
And then all the other elk run up to 30 yards from me and are standing there looking at him.
Jeez. Wow.
And then go back to bugling. Like, they walked just over the rock pile from me, and I could hear the one bugling again.
That's nuts. Because I've not elk hunted before, and I hear of the horror stories of people putting what seems to be like good shots on elk. And whether they're running uphill, downhill, they don't bleed much. They're extremely tough animals. They're hard to track. Whatever.
That's what
the animal gets away from.
Well, and it's also the terrain out there. 'Cause, like, Luke had killed one 2 days before I did. And he made, looking at the shot, looking at the entrance and exit, he had a pass through on his.
Oh, wow.
And it was not far behind the shoulder. The entrance was a little bit farther back, but not much. but it ran downhill, and it's really dry out there this year.
Right.
We were, I mean, it was an inch or two of powder in the four-wheeler trails.
So no campfires, probably.
No campfires at all. No grills, even.
Wow. What'd
like
y'all do?
Charcoal grills.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But
propane, there's propane.
It made it really, really tough to blood trail.
I bet.
And he shot his midway up a mountain, and it ran downhill the whole time. So, you know how tough it is to blood trail when an animal's running downhill on nothing but adrenaline. It doesn't bleed much, and we looked and looked and looked for it, and ended up stumbling upon it just on the way out. We're like, oh, well, there it is. Well, him and his dad Larry actually looked up the trail, heard the flies buzzing, because I mean the flies out there are
horrible,
notorious for finding animals. And like you make sure you have black pepper, and anytime you cut them, like I gutted mine, and then when I went back to go before I went back to get help, I covered everything in black pepper, and it keeps the flies and yellow jackets off.
Interesting. I'd never heard that before. Yeah. There you go.
And it worked. I mean, it's one of those, you're kind of skeptical the first time you do it, but
that's pre-season.
We walked back up there, and there were flies on the hide.
Right.
But they were not where I'd put pepper on the cut or anything.
Wow. Huh. There you go. Things you learn.
Yeah.
Along the way.
What head did you shoot? What broadhead did you shoot that cow with? Or that bull with?
I shot it with a hypodermic.
Okay.
The Rage hypodermic.
Did you shoot the first one 3 years ago? What did you use then?
I used a Havoc, the G5 Havoc that time.
Yep.
So both 2-inch expandables.
Rear deploying expandables, yep. Yeah. How far did your elk run 2-3 years ago?
60, 70 yards.
You're a joker. Everybody hates you right now.
I did almost the same shot. I shot it at like 25 yards, and it stuck in the offside shoulder. And I watched it actually ran down the hill about 60, 70 yards, and I topped the hill and watched it fall over.
Gotcha. Huh.
So you're a joker.
You called it in this year. You set up on a pinch point 3 years ago. What I think what's awesome about this one, and why I really like the sounds of this camp, is the camp life. The camp life.
Oh, the camp life for this one, for this hunt, is awesome. Because like the last time, it's a group of older guys that have gone for 40 years, I think. It's kind of their tradition. They go about every year, depending upon who has tags.
Mm-hmm.
The last time we went, there were six or seven of us, and none of the other guys had tags, and all they did was bought small game licenses and grouse hunted.
Oh, neat.
I saw where they shot some grouse this year too.
Yeah. That's, they all would get small game licenses and ride around on four wheelers and just kind of, they would take it easy. And then the meals are a huge deal. Well, this year, only all but one of the guys, Luke's dad, Larry, he did not have a tag. The two guys had, there were six of us this year, and two guys had cow muzzleloader tags, and another guy had a archery tag, and then Luke and I had archery tags.
Were you the only two to kill this year?
I haven't heard. They left a couple days after us.
Gotcha.
Now, they were struggling to see cows, so I don't know if they ended up ever actually seeing any.
Gotcha.
But the meals, I mean, one night we had pork cutlets. they fried pork cutlets, I think. And, of course, we've been walking all day, we've been walking like 7 miles, and you get back and there's a big old meal of like fried pork cutlets and mashed potatoes and gravy. And I mean, we gorged on that.
It's just done right.
I think the funny one that you told me was you guys had killed, and I don't know if it was Luke's elk or your elk, but you skipped lunch and you came back that night.
We were already planning a fish fry that night. Mm-hmm. And the guy that brought the fish freezes them in he had 60 fillets.
Ooh.
That he'd brought with us.
A crappie. Yep.
Like from, I think it was combo. I don't think it was just him. Because all the guys crappie fish, so they all gather up stuff to bring. But we ended up having 60 crappie fillets, and we were going to have fish that night. Well, then I killed that morning.
Yep.
So none of us ate lunch. So we were starving by the time we got back. And the plan was we were going to fry the fish, and then we'd eat cold fish the next day. Well, we ended up sitting down and we're so hungry, and we got done and we looked and we're like, well, how much fish is left? And we'd eaten 55 fillets between six of us.
Oh my word. Wow.
And that was with fried potatoes as well. So, and I think I'm pretty sure because Larry also does homemade pies too.
Oh my.
So
gosh.
Like he did an apple
Jokers.
Pie at one point and he did a cherry pie that day. So,
man alive.
I mean, they take their meals seriously in that camp.
No kidding.
More seriously than the hunting,
sounds
it's like.
Y'all plan a month out for like what you need gear wise.
They plan
like
the meal. I mean, it's every guy, some of the guys, like their wives will make something and freeze it
mm-hmm.
and they bring it out and it's like, okay, we're going to thaw this out today and eat this.
Oh, awesome. I'm going to tell you, Chad. When we went to Nebraska, which we were in Nebraska the same time you were in Colorado, and we had our QDMA banquet the Saturday night. Of course, you missed that. You were still out in Colorado. But so we took the leftovers, which was pulled pork and brisket and then baked beans.
Three gallons of coleslaw.
three gallon bags of coleslaw and then two big old Tupperwares of baked beans. And so when we got out there, we ate baked beans. We ate the leftovers of barbecue. Well, the next day we ate I forget what they made. Lasagna.
That was
the only meal of the whole week. We didn't have beans in some part of our meal.
Well,
so you imagine five grown men and we're eating beans for multiple meals a day, lunch and dinner.
Baked beans. Then we had
my
chili.
My stomach is still jacked up from that trip.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, the two nights that Luke and I were there by ourselves, we went with the easiest meals possible. So the first night we had fried hot dogs and green beans.
Oh, yuck.
And the second night we had fried brats and green beans.
Oh, wow.
Because you're like, let's just keep this easy. We just want something to fill our stomachs.
That's right.
We can get by until the other guys get here and start cooking
and
big meals.
Like five course meals.
What kind of grouse is it they have out there?
I think they're blue grouse.
That's what it looks
they go
like.
By different stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those when you talk to Grandpa, he remembers them as fool's grouse.
Gotcha.
Because they, I mean, some of them will flush, and then there were two different times that, like Luke and I, called some up to almost our feet. I mean, they were within five steps of us, just walking around us.
That's just silly.
What about the trout? I know you posted some pictures of trout.
Yeah, we can't. It's those little brookies, brook trout, and all those absolutely pretty of a fish as you'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't the other time. I guess they used to have big fish fries out there where they would go out and all split up and go to different holes and catch a big mess of brook trout and cook them up, but the last time we didn't cook them, so this time with it so hot we had some time and we went and caught a mess just to taste pretty much, and they're small enough, your limit, you can keep like 10 under 8 inches, so there's not a whole lot of meat to those, but
clearly
we just
we're looking at
a picture,
we just
like
cut the,
size
you cut the head
hand,
off you cut the head off and gut them and then make a couple scores in the skin and then just batter them and fry them is how we did it. We just pan fried them and they were really really good.
Didn't taste like your normal rainbow trout grown in a
no yeah. They didn't taste like they'd been eating dog food for their whole life.
Yeah. Oh, that's why I don't like trout. It's because they're all dog food fed trout, basically. But
yeah, these are living in those little tiny streams. I mean, mm-hmm. you sneak up. They're really skittish, but you walk up and like I brought a fly rod, but all I did was put a hook and a worm on it. But I brought a fly rod because it was longer, and would just dabble it down in the holes and. I mean, if you didn't spook them, they would jump all over a worm.
Wow. So we're getting ready to wrap up, but what are your biggest tips for someone doing a do-it-yourself elk hunt, new to elk hunting? What are the three things that they just need to be very mindful of to stay successful?
I'd say the biggest is the research. I mean, these guys had already found the spot. The way they found this area was they would go out in the summers and ride with their wives.
Okay.
They would take a camping trip every year and ride around, and they happened to find this area and found that there seemed to be more elk in there. And then on top of that, you've got so many different apps and stuff on your phones to where you can look at Google Earth, look at all those things and look at all the different, we ended up on this trip, found a trail that we didn't know about that saved us a ton of walking. The last time we went out there, we were walking way off the hill and we happened to find this four-wheeler trail that went on around and saved us a lot of walking. But in the same sense, definitely, I mean, it's kind of a given with public land, but be willing to walk a lot farther than the normal person will.
Sure.
That's one of those that's pretty much a given. Be ready to walk. And sometimes, you know, though, we got onto elk. One night we heard elk bugling from camp.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, in the same sense, don't get so locked in on walking miles and miles away from camp. Sometimes there's the little hidey holes that nobody thinks to go to. Everybody gets locked in on going a certain direction, and there's a spot that's not that far from camp that nobody goes to.
Yeah, don't be afraid to hunt the camp bull.
For sure. Well, cool. And anything else on your mind?
Nah, no, I don't guess.
You don't want to ask that question.
No, there's always stuff on our minds.
Yeah, I think that, to me, it's a very unique trip that a lot of people, you know, when you think about out west, there's so much of a, you have to work out, you have to train, and you have to do this, and you have to pack light, and you have to eat food from a little baggie. But then you've been out there twice, and it's been like you eat like kings, and then you kill.
I mean, you expect to, if you're walking 7 miles and that kind of stuff and walking yourself out of breath, you expect to lose weight, but when you're eating like that, it's not as
tough.
Big of a thing.
Yeah.
So it's, I guess you could say, don't be intimidated by thinking you have to go in the gym all the time and be working out and trying to get in absolutely the best shape of your life. Mm. I mean, it helps to be in pretty good shape. I was running quite a bit this summer, just preparing my lungs more than anything, but
sure.
It's not one of those that you just have to. Now you're going to kill some bigger bulls if you go to some of those spots where it's like that, but it's still a fun trip.
No doubt. It sounds like a great time.
And a lot of elk to eat.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, good deal. We're super glad that you got an elk and were able to come on the podcast and share
it with us. Here's my question. My would you rather, Chad, would you rather, if you could pack one call, would you rather pack an elk bugle call or a cow call?
Oh, I would see. I've got you on this one because I would always. It would be a mouth call now.
Gotcha.
Because the mouth call, you can do both.
Okay, there you go.
Done.
So
done deal.
Just pack a mouth call, and it was even more. Last time I didn't really practice with it. Didn't really know as much on the sounds, but yeah, this time it's throw the mouth call in, and it's like turkey season. Walk around with a mouth call in your cheek, and when you need it, you flip it over and make a sound. And
awesome.
It actually did better at imitating a young bull.
Right.
There you go.
Cool deal.
Sounds good. Well, Chad, we appreciate you coming on. Hopefully everybody learned a little bit about the DIY Colorado elk hunt. And we all are very jealous of it, I'm sure.
Yep.
And anyway, Matt, you got any final thoughts?
Get your rear back up here to Missouri soon. We're going to have all these big bucks up here shot before you get back.
Yeah. You guys need to get the cameras figured out and get us some spots figured out so when I come up here, I can kill a deer too.
We'll be sure to make some good camp food for you too, you joker.
Yeah, I bet.
I'm going to
What do they call it when you spike? I'm going to spike it with X-lax.
Yeah. So he can't stay up in the tree. Yeah. He's climbing up and down.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Man. Sounds good, Chad. We appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you.
Everybody enjoyed it. We will catch you next time.
See ya.
Thanks for having me on.
See ya.
See ya.